Blog Talk Radio.
Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate and a miracle or two? The Candyman. The Candyman can. The Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. Who can take a rainbow, wrap it in a sigh, soak it in the sun and make the strawberry lemon pie?
The Candyman.
The Candyman. The Candyman can. The Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. Willy Wonka makes everything he bakes satisfying and delicious. Talk about your childhood wishes. You can even eat the dishes. Who can take tomorrow, dip it in a dream, separate the sorrow and collect up all the cream? The Candyman.
Willy Wonka can.
The Candyman can. The Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. And the world tastes good, cause the Candyman thinks it should.
I guess maybe we should be off mute when I do the whole intro. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters and maybe the Twisted Mister.
I was in the studio, so I didn't realize we were both on mute. And oh my God. Like, are you on mute, Phil? And it was like you're just silent.
I did the whole thing. I did the whole intro, and then I said, "Oh, hello, Pam." And I looked, and I went, "Oh, we're both on mute still. Very good." So I've outdone myself tonight. I've muted from the very beginning. And
it's practically a record.
Pretty much. Although I have muted Rex at the very beginning of his show a couple of times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I try not to do that anymore, figuring he's not going to lose his sense of humor about that. But yeah, so, wow, that was funny. You know, every time I hear that song, I have to tell the truth. You know, I always expect to hear Sammy Davis's voice because Sammy Davis used to sing that all the time. And it was not him singing that song, so it always throws me a curve when somebody else sings it. I'm not quite sure.
I looked at the lyrics, and it was a totally different song. Like, it's called The Candyman, but it's a totally different song.
The Candyman can. No, I think it's the same song, Pam. But that's okay.
Okay, but Sammy Davis Jr. does, I'm just saying, maybe he sings both, but all I'm saying is I looked at the lyrics, and
I don't know. But I've heard him sing it for so many years.
That would be actually good in Sammy Davis Jr.'s voice.
But it's okay, this one was good, I liked it, so, you know, but it just throws me such
a it has the nostalgia of being from the original Willy Wonka movie, so.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
That's it. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
There's something about that movie. Oh, my God. I've loved it. And every time they do a remake of it, I cringe. I go, don't touch it. Just leave it alone.
Now,
granted, I like Johnny Depp and I like creativity, but I'm one of those people that firmly believes if it's not broke, don't fix it.
I just can't.
But I get it. I get it. Great movie, great song.
Yeah.
Look, it sounds like it's going to be some fun tonight.
I think so. We had like about 12 or so carryovers from my last show, which was the children's book authors quotes.
Nice.
And so all I needed to do was get a few more. I ran an 8-spot only contest. It did not fill up because, you know, it's just that time of year where it's getting warmer. People aren't writing as much. Plus, they're writing, I think, for, like, contests for all poetry, for National Poetry Month.
Right. Absolutely.
But I didn't need a lot. I already had like 12. Then I got like 4 from the contest. Naomi's got one shared. I got one shared. Plus we have a classic poem that I always started out with. So I think we have about 20 total on the board.
Right. Well, you don't want my candy. I only have one poem about candy, and we don't want to read that because that's a Wednesday poem. It's not as bad.
I know that. I checked. And the funny thing is I kept going to people's pages. I went to your page. I went to Rex's page. I went to Gray's page. And all three of you, the only candy poem you had was something central. And
see?
The rest of it was so naughty, I just cracked up. I'm like, geez, I guess none of these people are going to be put on the show.
Not on Tuesday, especially not next to children.
If I really needed the candy rights, I would have gone, hey, guess what? The last, 20 minutes of this Tuesday is going to be really twisted Tuesday.
Oh, my God. Yes, absolutely. We're going to throw them all a curve. But, yeah, so that's funny, though. But I did have to chuckle. Oh, my goodness. So how's your weather, Pam? Are you having snow yet?
Not yet, thankfully. Lots of rain, though. I had it set in my head last night. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start going for morning walks because yesterday was nice. It was warm. I thought, you know, after breakfast, I'll go for a walk. No, it was chilly and raining all day. So it could turn to snow by tonight. Hopefully,
that's
won't
stick
around.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
How about
you? Bring my flowers. Well, it was actually nice today. I had the back door open most of the day, and I had the dog out so she could just come in and go out, and come in and go out, and do whatever the hell she wanted, and nobody could yell at me for having her outside all day, you know. But it was the breeze coming in the kitchen was beautiful, just beautiful. So I was liking that, you know. I wasn't out running around though. I'm not gonna lie. I kind of napped my way through the day. It seemed appropriate. And
I totally get that. I did.
Yeah, you know, I think the weather being up, being down, you know, is just kind of incredible. But you know, I'm happy that we're kind of leveling out a little bit. I mean, we're doing between the 60s and 70s for like the last week or so. You know, the 70s make the 60s. Seem cold, but you know, it's much better. I just don't like the dampness when it does rain, so not my favorite.
I know. Yeah, that's what it is like today, just downpour.
Yeah.
And my daughter stayed home sick. At first she thought it was just allergies because she helped to rake leaves out of her sister's. And, you know, and it did seem a lot like allergies, but then she woke up this morning with, like, a voice like a frog, you know, and it was, like, really, like, rough, like, I think I'm sick, Mom.
That's a clue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll tell you. But everybody's got something going on with their voice. Most of the people I've talked to lately that have been sick, they just keep losing their voice. And I thought, God, you know, because when I had it, I thought, oh, this is ridiculous, you know. But, and mine lasted, it seemed like forever. But, so a lot of stuff going on with the throats and the voice. And I really, you know, think a lot of it is attributed to allergies, but there's some that's not.
Oh, yeah, know. Probably.
You know, there's that time of year.
I know, this time of year my allergies get bad.
Yeah, it's never fun. So, yeah. So, I don't know, Pam. Tell us more about the show tonight, or tell me when you want to start the show tonight, and I'll shut up. Ah, that's even better.
All right, well, you know, I think the concept is pretty simple. Like I said, I ran an 8-spots-only contest with a photograph of the inside of a candy shop by Carol R. Scott. I told people either write to the picture or just on the theme candy shop, because I thought, you know, because that's where the intro song came in, because one of the children's authors that we have a quote by is Roald Dahl, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So, you know, I thought, why not, you know, combined to, although I do admit I had another contest. I actually had this artist that I wanted to run a contest for, a show for. And I put up one picture of her, figuring that if that contest filled up and I had a couple of carryovers, I'd run a bigger contest with more of her artwork. But that did not do good at all. I had like basically 3, and they were all 3 users. And I'm like, this isn't working. So, you know, and that happens sometimes. So then my brain clicked and went with the candy shop idea. And although it didn't fill up, it did have a slightly better response, because there is something about candy and candy shop that does bring out a sense of nostalgia, you know.
Right.
And, you know, those favorite things of the child become the, you know, can become your favorite sweets, as silly as oftentimes your favorite sweets as an adult. So, you know, I thought it would just be fun. It would fit, you know, with the first topic, so there wasn't so much of a, you know, like this, like, really big turnabout of where are we going now. Not that there's anything wrong with that on a Twisted Tuesday, but, you know.
No, I hear you.
Why not have something? Yeah, yeah. So I did find a page with a few interesting facts about candy, figuring that would be fun to share. Candy, the word candy actually comes from the ancient Indian Sanskrit kanda, which means a piece of sugar. Years later, the Arabic word moved one step closer with kwandi, and the Middle English word candy began to be used in the late 13th century.
Wow.
It is believed that,
it
is believed that Indians were the first to use the sweet juice of sugar cane. That's Indians from India, not Native Americans, about 3,000 years ago. But there is some evidence that islanders in Papua New Guinea were aware of the sweetness of sugar cane 3,000 years before that. You know, before sugar came to the West, the Egyptians used honey and made candy by adding figs, nuts, dates, and spices. Greeks used honey to make candied fruits and flowers. The manufacturing of sugar began in the Middle Ages, but at that time it was so expensive that only the rich could afford candy made from sugar. Before the Industrial Revolution, candy was often used as a form of medicine, either to calm the digestive system or cool a sore throat. The first candy came to America in the early 18th century, to Britain and France, and it was only available at that time for the rich. During the 1830s and 1840s, it becomes more available to regular people with the invention of the candy press in 1847. It was possible to produce multiple shapes and sizes of candy at once. And, of course, if you look up fast food candy and any candy you like, you can discover facts about it. So there's a whole lot of interesting information out there. Last two that I'll mention is the cotton candy. The machine-spun cotton candy was invented in 1897 by the dentist William Morrison and confectioner John C. Wharton, and first introduced to a wide audience at the 1904 World's Fair as fairy floss. And nobody knows who is certain who invented the lollipop, But the name, who invented stick candy, but the name lollipop was coined by George Smith, the owner of the business confection business called the Bradley Smith Company, who named it after his favorite racing game. So yeah, there's some fun facts for people to know about candy. Oh, and I see Robbie on the board. Hello, Robbie. Good to see you.
See, I don't see anybody on the board. I guess I have to refresh already.
Probably, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah, I found that interesting that you said that candy was used for digestion. And I guess that's where something kind of carried through, because I remember when I had my daughter, if there was ever any issue about her being constipated, for lack of a better word, my mother said, put a little Karo in that sterile water. She says, it'll straighten them right out. So there must be some truth to that, you know, all the way through. That's just old-time thing that we used to do back in the dark ages,
you know,
when dinosaurs roamed the earth. You know.
No, I totally get that. I totally get that. When I was a kid, people still put like a little bit of like syrup, you know, in
right.
the bottles, and but yeah, by the time I had my first kid, and she and the baby had a lot of problems with constipation. It was actually recommended to put a little bit of prune juice into her formula.
Ah, see? Yeah, but my mother always did a little bit of Karo syrup, just a little bit. It worked like a charm. Yep. So, yeah, I think that's kind of funny. Robbie's really funny out there tonight. What have you been up to, Robbie? You're awful cheerful and silly. I like it.
Well, obviously, he went to the candy shop.
Apparently. I think so. He must have had his fill of something sweet and yummy. Although he says, speaking of candy, I see Robbie on the board. And then he says he's the sweetest of candies. He's in a silly mood tonight. I like that. So he said he will pull in a bit, he thinks. So we'll be looking forward to Robbie. It's just Pam and I. So until you call in, they're all going to have to put up with just us.
That's right. But that's okay, because we'll be somewhat sweet.
I'll be nice.
We're more like those warheads or those
Sour Patch Kids. Exactly.
At first we're sour and then we're sweet.
That's us. Absolutely. And don't forget to raise your hand, Robbie, if you call in. I'll be watching. Oh, God, that's so crazy. Oh, my goodness gracious. Yes. Okay, Pam. Well, wherever you want to begin, we'll begin.
All right. Well, we will go ahead and begin with the classic poem, Window Shopper, by Robert W. Service. And it goes like this. I stood before a candy shop which lit the Christmas radiance shone. I saw my parents pass and stop to grin at me and then go on. The sweets were peeping, dreamy rolls on each side seated. What a day against the glass with flatted nose, gulping my spittle as it came. So still I stood and stared and dreamed, savoring sweetness with my eyes, devouring dainties till it seemed my candy shop was paradise. I had, I think, at 5 years old, and though 3 score and 10 have passed, I still recall the crank of cold, the grimy street, the gritty blast, and how I stared into that shop, with gifts so near and yet so far, of marzipan and toffee drop, of chocolate and walnut bar, imagining what I would spy amid the lights so rich and rare. The glasses misted with my sigh, if just one penny pop could spare. And then when I went home to see a bread and butter slightly spread, oh, how my parents fitted me. You stood for full an hour, they said. We saw you as we passed again, your eyes upon the sweets reviewed. your nose is red and to the pain, like someone hypnotized you good. But when they laughed, I got a joke, a bitterness I would not stem. I could not stem. Within my little heart awoke, oh, I have long forgiven them. For though I know they did no own pennies to spare, they at night, it seems, more understanding love had shown, more sympathy for those vain dreams, which make of me with wistful gaze, God's window stopper all days. And home. And I am actually in a horrible status, so I am going to go ahead, hang up, and call back. But if you would like to go ahead, please, Jean, and comment on that classic poem.
I know Robert Service right is chomping at the bit for my comment, so you go ahead. I'll talk to you in a minute. I think this is a great piece and a wonderful piece for tonight's show. I think it really fit the theme of the show, the candy shop. And, you know, kids, tell me a kid that if they got to be at the candy shop, there's not as many as there used to be, and they wouldn't just stand there in awe of all the wonderful treats and all the great dreams of just deliciousness. You know, I love that second stanza the most. I had, I think, but 5 years old, and though 80 and 10 have passed, I still recall the craintive cold, the grimy street and gritty blast, and how I stared into that shop, its gifts so near and yet so far, of marzipan and toffee drop, of chocolate and of walnut bar, imagining what I would buy amid delights so rich and rare. The glass was misted with my sigh, if just one penny Pop could spare. I think that's just a wonderful piece for the show in general, and a great piece, you know, without the show. I have to say it that way, I guess. And Mr. Service, I think you did a fine job with this piece. I loved your and I loved the way that you put this together. And yeah, it was just a great choice for tonight, Pam.
Thank you. And you crack me up because I think we all feel the same way. Like I love sharing classic poems. Like I try to obviously do that every Tuesday and some other shows. But when we comment on them, like I want to comment on them, but at the same time, kind of like you were saying, joking around, like, yeah, I'm sure he's just chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
You've got to hear my comment.
Absolutely. Hey, did your static go away, or do I need to hang up and call back?
Yeah, I don't know. You might have to call, hang up and call back.
Okay, I'm going to
do that. Already did, and I...
You still
don't
hear
as much static, but I do still hear
yeah.
Some.
That's okay. I don't hear anything, so that's why I asked. Okay, I'll call right back.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought this was definitely a great choice. I actually had another poem picked out about cotton candy, but it had a little more sad nostalgia to it. And this one, I thought it really fit well. I think it's, you know, I really like the poetry of Robert W. Service, great rhyming poet in classic poetry. And I like the way he has an ability to tell a story. It's great fun. I like the way he brings in what it's like to be a poor child and to grow up to understand that we don't always get every treat that we want.
Right.
So, absolutely. But great writing, very well done there, Mr. Service. Thank you for your service.
Oh, my God. This means he's going to drop a net on us tonight. Hey, does that sound better?
I think it does.
Okay, well, we'll give it a whirl then.
And now we are going to go into the rites that were inspired, that were for Children's Authors Day. So it's inspired by quotes from various children's authors. And so first one we have up is A Very Rare Sort of Bear by K.F. Hartlett. And go ahead, please, and give that a read.
Okie dokie. A very rare sort of bear. It's nice having a bear about the house, shyly eating marmalade, and as long as I honor his critical space, he's a truly excellent flatmate. It's fun having a bear nearby. Into the rafters he aptly climbs, standing on a beam upright, to smell the arrival of each night and change a light bulb nearby. It's easy having a bear as a bud. Even when he messes up, he blindly makes his bed and ends up with covers shred. And while he keeps the carpet sturdy with his seasonal shed, I find a bear to be a joyful room and a trustworthy friend. End poem. Cute.
Great read there, Dean. And he wrote, too, "It's nice having a bear about the house," by Michael Bond, who is the author of Paddington Bear series. And I really enjoyed the humor in this. And when I commented on it and said it had such fun, clever humor and was a wonderful, entertaining write on the joys and benefits of having a bear for a roommate, she made me laugh more when she said, "Thank you kindly, Pam. Honestly, I think I may be the bear in this scenario." And I think we can all be the bear. You know, but I do like how, while this really relates well with the story of Paddington Bear, I also think it does really well with what it's like to have a roommate. I remember there was a year I lived with my sister, and I love my sister, but we did not make good roommates. But there, with any
right.
roommate, though, you know, there's always
right.
those pros and cons. And I really like this all the way through, but especially it's easy having a bear as a bud. Even when he messes up, he blindly makes his bed and ends up with covers shred. You know, great lines
right.
and very well done. And
right.
Dean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought it was a great piece all the way through. Each one of the stanzas had its own touch of humor. I did grab it from the top. "It's nice having a bear about the house, shyly eating marmalade, and as long as I honor his critical space, he's a truly excellent flatmate. It's fun having a bear nearby. Into the rafters he aptly climbs, standing on a beam upright to smell the arrival of each night and change a light bulb nearby." Yeah, you know, put him to work. If he's up there, you know, let's just get it done. So I thought there was some clever thoughts throughout. I like the thoughts and the imagery, as a matter of fact, you know, throughout the whole piece. And I thought it was just well done. You know, I hate to grab the first two and say, "Oh, the second two I didn't grab." But, you know, people laugh at me when I grab all of the lines. You know, they think I'm a little crazy. Yeah, I am a little crazy, you know. But I really did. When the covers get shredded, I thought, oh, gosh. Yeah, I guess they're conducive to making a bed, you know. But, I thought it was great. I did. So nice job, KF Hartley, and thanks for sharing with us. Great little piece.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm thankful I've never had a bear walk into a house. I've heard stories of bears going into houses.
I'm sure. If you walk up your front yard, though, I've heard those stories. Too funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was one time I had one actually walk into my garage, and the garage was attached to the house.
Oh, my God.
Thankfully, it didn't come into the house.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that has scared the daylights out of you. Absolutely. Too crazy.
Yeah, crazy, crazy stuff, that's for sure. But great comment there, Gene. All right, and up next we have A Dog Bath, number 20, by Jeff Blue. "Someone with a shady hat loomed like a trendy cat, wandering spontaneously through the forest to be free from the curse of cleverness or meditate for fairy guests, an emerald kaleidoscope of luminous celestial hope. Didn't really capture him when the night began to brim madly with relentless riddles, lingering like witches' fiddles, as if to reminisce or rhyme with the bluish void of time. He took his moonlit shadows around the snowy meadows where a lake of lilac weeds sleep to be galactic beads, The traces of his little feet continued endlessly to meet the great familiar fairy's gate, where no poet mentioned fate, in tomorrow's majesty, mirrored in a cup of tea. End poem. And, oh my goodness, this was just such an absolutely beautiful rhyming poem and delightful. Your thoughts, Jean? Are you on mute, Jean?
Oh, that's a twofer.
It is. buy one mute, get one free.
There you go. There you go. I should be done then, right?
Mm.
I was saying when Jack Blue writes, he always has this touch of, his work is always different. It's just different. I can't always put my finger on it because I hate to say, oh, well, you know, it's a fairy tale. Because it reminds me of a fairy tale. I don't know. I like the lines here, an emerald kaleidoscope of luminous celestial hope. Didn't really capture him when the night began to brim madly with relentless riddles, lingering with witches' fiddles. You know, it just takes me into a different place. He's not just telling a story about a dog in a familiar setting. He takes it, he just has a different twist on it. And I like the piece. I like the first stanza. I like the second stanza. And I especially kind of liked the way he tied it up at the end. The traces of his little feet continued endlessly to meet the great familiar fairy's gate, where no poet mentioned fate, in tomorrow's majesty, mirrored in a cup of tea. It just gives it this little bit of a, what's the word that I want? I don't know. I can't come up with the wording for it, but I think that it really, just as I say, walks down a different path. And it gives a bit of mystery, maybe, into where this is actually taking place. His imagery is always good. His use of color is always intriguing to me. And I think that it's just a nice piece all the way around. So thank you, Luke, for sharing with us, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment. And it is a wonderful write that I do enjoy when he shares his poetry with us. He wrote, too, "Making a Journey by Night is more wonderful than anything in the world." And that's by Tove Jansson. When he responded to my comment, he said, "Tove Jansson is a special creator for me as well as Charles Schulz." And I thought that was really cool that within his response to the comment that he, told us that, you know, how much he enjoyed those two creators. And, you know, because I do think, like I said before, that the people,
right,
authors and artists we enjoyed as a child oftentimes stick with us through adulthood. That's such a delightful rhyming poem, wonderful imagery. It makes me think of the idea of a cat, like, walking out around at night, you know, getting, you know, or any small animal, but, you know, just the nighttime adventures that are full of magic and mysticism and, you know, all the delights of childhood imagination. And I really like that end line, "In tomorrow's majesty mirrored in a cup of tea." And it's a great line all the way through, but I thought that wrapped it up, or right all the way through, but I thought that wrapped it up nicely with the idea of, you know, kind of just letting your mind drift, you know, staring into that cup of tea and letting your mind drift into a world of fantasy. You know,
right.
And great lines. But I also do especially like "an emerald kaleidoscope of luminous celestial hope." I like that because it makes me think of the idea of making a wish upon that first star of the night. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Very well done.
Oh, my.
Robin must still be still be bathing.
Yeah.
He has to be nice and clean when he calls in.
Squeaky clean.
Yep. Clean body, dirty mind. That should be a saying. I don't know if that's actually a saying, but it should be.
Robbie, she said that. I did not say that. Pam did. Remember that. Pam said that. I did not.
Well, up next, we have Dawn Breaks by Mari Campbell. And go ahead, please, Jean, and give that a read.
Okay, dawn breaks. Dawn breaks like waves break in the sea, foaming at the mouth of the wild cave, home to a madman that I love. Sometimes in the heart of the sea you have claws and I have three eyes to stare at who you talk to, wondering, pondering. When I blink salt from my sight, if you touch her. If your claws catches onto hers like a crab nipping a fingertip. If having three eyes is too great a burden for a poor creature drowning. But then we are tossed from below and waves break like glass, you smash. Dawn burns my three eyes away. Only your claw holds me still as the wind sobs. Kyrie eleison. Lord have mercy.
Great.
And
read there, poem.
Wait. I have to do it officially.
Oh.
End poem.
Oh,
sorry.
There you go. And she wrote to, and Max, the king of all wild things, was lonely and wanted to be where someone loved him best of all, by Maurice Sendak. And I thought this was an intriguing take on the prompt. I thought it kind of, to me, had a layered depth to it in that it could be a literal story about monsters. But it seemed to me almost to go in a more metaphorical direction on, you know, finding, that seeking help when you feel like you're drowning, seeking that mercy, which is why I thought that end line was great. But I do like how it seems to speak on two monsters, but it seems as if the two monsters represent two people. And I really liked this. There were some great lines all the way through, but especially sometimes in the heart of the sea, you have claws and I have three eyes to stare at who you talk to, wondering, pondering, when I blink salt from my sight if you touch her. Those are really strong lines, speaking on the idea of betrayal and jealousy. And I really liked when I blink salt from my sight as a line to describe what it's like to, you know, constantly be blinking away the tears because you find yourself in emotionally painful situations.
Right.
But wonderful write by Mari and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought this was a nicely penned piece. I thought it was clever and, as you said, intriguing. I like the note of, well, I didn't like the note of, but, there's definitely a sense of jealousy tucked into the piece as you go along. It had me from the beginning because dawn breaks like waves break in the sea. Foaming at the mouth of a wild cave, home to a madman that I am, that I love. Sometimes in the heart of the sea you have claws and you have three eyes, and I have three eyes, to stare at who you talk to, wondering, pondering, when I blink salt from my sight if you touch her. It was different, and it was nicely penned. And it's interesting, you know, that as you said, there were two, like, monster kind of images, or I guess monsters is a good word for it.
There's so many other words I'm sure we could use.
I think originally my head was leaning towards creatures, but I think it just has more than that going on. And I found it, dawn burns my three eyes away. Only your claw holds me still as the wind sobs. Kyrie eleison. Lord have mercy. interesting ending to it as well. So it was definitely a nice piece. And as you said, and as I said before, it's intriguing where it came into play. And this is on Wild Things, so you know, I guess that's how it kind of pulls together. I'm just not. It wasn't clicking when I was reading it because, of course, I didn't know that till you told me. See? But, yeah, great job. So thank you, Mary Campbell. I wonder if that's supposed to be Mary Campbell. Just
you know, I wondered the same thing, or, like, maybe Marie, like in Mary
right.
or Marie. You know,
right.
I keep pronouncing it Mari because it kind of looks like it should be pronounced Mari, but you may be right because...
Yeah.
You know what?
The H really if
she listens to this show, maybe she'll be nice enough to message one of us and tell us how her name is pronounced
right.
phonetically.
I hate mispronouncing anybody's name on here.
But, me too. I'm always happy when people correct me. You know,
right.
I mean, I don't want them to yell at me or be jerks
right.
about it, but if somebody
right.
says, you know, hey, this is how you pronounce my name.
Right. It always helps. Exactly. And it's always better for the next
yeah.
time around.
Exactly. Exactly. And so Robbie says in LNT, unfortunately, that he has tried twice and he is not able to, not letting him through.
Oh, hang on. I'm going to message Robbie right now.
Okay. Well, while you do that, I'll grab the next poem. I have to say that we definitely have a great lineup of poetry tonight. And,
yes. Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
And so I'll go ahead and put up the next poem and give it a read. It is Staying True to My Dear Self by Jenny the Deep. Look what I can do, oops. Let me take off me shoes. Who needs magical thrills when I can use my mad skills? Watch me lower my tiny sausage toes. Now see my huge gear shift big toe. Lifting my big toe up, I explain, thumbs up, dude. A lesser-known talent, most fine crude, I find myself to be most proud of some whistle others can roll their tongue, but me, I make my big toes look like slugs. I might be weird or strange to you, but to myself, I'll always be truer than true. End poem. I really enjoy this one. I'm going to go into commenting so that Dean has a little more time to communicate with Robbie. And I love the humor in this. She was inspired by Prompt 21 and 22 and wrote this for kids and all. So basically the young and the young at heart. And let me see here. 21 was, yes, I'm not strange, weird, off, nor crazy. My reality is just different from yours. And today you argue that it's truer than true. There is no one alive who is newer than you. And that is Lewis Carroll and Dr. Seuss. I really, like I said, this was fun. I actually can relate to this. I don't really do anything with my toes, but my mom and my sister both have those really flexible toes that they can, you know, pick things up with their toes and, you know, color and all that. And a couple of my kids got that. My kids all got the tongue roll. But, you know, it's a fun, humorous write, but it also has a nice message about embracing your inner weirdo, about embracing the unique qualities of yourself. And I have to say I did enjoy the humor of lifting my big toe up, I explained, thumbs up, dude. That makes me think of the original, what was that show with the girl that with twins and she goes, thumbs up, dude. Why can't I think of it all of a sudden? Steve. Oh, well. But it's on the tip of my tongue, but anyways, I did really like the end line too. I might be weird or strange to you, but to myself, I'll always be truer than two. Amen to that. And would you like to share your thoughts?
So where do you want me to begin? Thoughts? Oh my God! No, I thought this was a unique piece, and it was well put together, and it was fun, you know. And I picked it up from lifting my big toe up. I exclaimed, "Thumbs up, dude!" A lesser known talent, most fine and crude. I find myself to be most proud of. Some whistle, others can roll their tongue, but me, I make my big toes look like thumbs. I might be weird or strange to you, but to myself, I'll always be truer than true. And that's the thing, you know, you embrace who you are and our different quirks, you know, not Jenny's in particular, but, you know, really that's the best thing any of us can do. You know, we kind of embrace those things about us. They're just a little different. So I thought it was good work. Absolutely. Now, I have dialed in Robbie, but it does not seem like it's going through.
Huh.
So I'm not sure what to think about that.
Well, it seems to me like you and I might be stuck alone with each other.
Oh,
and
my God.
Good.
Really?
Lord, no.
Oh, God. I don't know if I can handle it. I'm bound to get in trouble before this is over. Absolutely. Oh my God!
I just hope neither. Okay, fingers crossed. Knock on wood. Neither one of us drops and can't fall back.
Well, wouldn't that just be
something? At least we know Robbie's sincere. Like, at least we know that even if the whole show is just me and you, because other people can't call in, that they can actually listen and hear us if they want to. You know, so.
Robbie had to bleep himself. What a trip. Yeah, I mean.
That is.
That usually
that is
does
just,
not be wonky. How crazy is that?
That is extremely wonky. But yeah, last night, like 3 minutes before the show was going to end, I got dropped and Rex was commenting, so I called back and got back on, thankfully, just in time to hear him go, "And what are we going to next, Pam?" And I'm like, thank goodness he's a long-winded commenter.
Yeah. I just don't believe it's just sitting there. It says it's dialing, but it's just not doing anything, so.
Wow,
I don't
that
know.
Is odd. Well,
yeah,
it was a good thought. Just to see if it would work, because it should, but yeah.
Right, absolutely. Well, Rob, if your phone starts ringing and you see a New York number, that's me. And if not, we love having you on the board. It'd just be more fun to hear you talking to us. But it is okie dokie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Pam, I'm ready when you are.
Okay. Well, up next we have Worldview by A.R. Mundell. And go ahead, please, Gene, and give that a read.
Okay, Worldview. When my eyes shut on my final day, will it all blink out with me? Will it all fade away? The world as I see it and hear it and taste will fade into darkness or some afterplace. So the earth which I know can no longer be, as there's no one who hears it in the same way as me. But is that a world or is it a view? Will you go on existing or will you fade out too? End poem.
Great reading. I have to say, Amy is definitely one of my favorite rhyming poets on all poetry. And I think I have seen her write three verses before, but she tends to do more rhyme. But either way, she's just, you know, a very talented poet.
Right.
I thought, and she wrote to prompt number 22, the Dr. Seuss quote, "Today you and you that is truer than, today you are you and that is truer than true, that no one alive is youer than you." And I thought this was such a great take on the chosen prompt, great rhyme flow, wonderful lines, and the importance of being true to yourself and not just fading into and just following along with the world. Like, I think there's a really, to me, a deep and serious message in here, but there's something between the rhyming and her word choices that give it, like, I can kind of smooth it over with a bit of a lighthearted feel. I do like how she speaks on the idea of how too often we can fade into darkness with the rest of the world. And also when she says, so the earth which I know can no longer be, as there's no one who knows it in the same way as me. That to me was great lines on perspective. You know, the way different people will see the same situation or, you know, have different life experiences. And it's the life experiences that you have that shape the world that you know. So great life here by the Indian, very well done. And
I thought this was a nicely penned piece. And as you said, a great take on the prompt. I hate following you, Pam, I have to say. Yeah, and what she said. But I thought the thoughts were real, well expressed. And in quotes, or in parentheses, for good questions posed. So the earth which I know can no longer be, as there's no one who knows it in the same way as me. But is that a world or is it a view? Will you go on existing or will you fade out too? I thought that was just a clever way to end this piece up. And it does have that a bit of a Seuss feel, you know. I mean, it does when you're reading it. So, Amy, I think you did a fine job. So, just really a nice piece. And it was clever. It was different. It was a different take on – a different angle on the poetry that I've read, you know, so far tonight. And I like that. I like that. Pretty much.
Me too. You're right. It does have a Dr. Seuss vibe to it. It kind of reminds me of, well, it has Dr. Seuss rhyme, but it also reminds me of how he actually does some darker artwork and stories, but you don't hear about them as often or read about them as often. And so it kind of made me think about that. You know.
Yeah.
Really cool comment there, Jane. And let's go ahead and grab the next one. Robbie is funny, isn't he?
I don't know, Robbie. I'd be upset if he called me. But anyway,
oh my gosh.
I'm going to hop off that topic. I might have to give him a piece of my mind, and I don't have many to spare. See, that's the way I see it.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, up next we have Stay in Your Lane by Truth Chills. And it goes like this. Since the moment of my birth, the earth has given way and etched out a walk for my feet. Victory, defeat, or surrender. The stones under me are mine to do with what I choose. Thistles and thorns are thicker in some spots. They shape curves in my spine and remind me about the forget-me-not. I could never understand the meaning of dreaming and wishing for something more than what we were born for. If I hoard your dreams and try to fit my life into your dreams, I could only produce nightmares like a fat kid trying to fit in skinny jeans. They finally get them on and distort the seams. My life was meant for me, as sad as some parts came to be. I figured out why I'm not running around with my pants on my head, drooling and laughing the day away. It's simply because I stayed in my lane. We seem to forget that without trouble, there would be no struggle. Without the struggle, there would be no gain, and without no gain, we would never achieve anything. Victories are won by losers. If we never fall, how can we ever stand tall? So if an obstacle is meant to slow me down, I will use it for my benefit and focus on the lessons that come with it. End poem. And she wrote through prompt 6, which was, I have to look it up because I don't have all 22 prompts memorized.
Yeah.
The best way to treat obstacles is to use them as stepping stones, laugh at them, tread on them, and let them lead you to something better, by Enid Blyton. And, Jean, what did you think of his chill story?
Well, I thought it was a great write. I liked the direction she went with the prompt. Since the movement of my birth, the earth has given me away and etched down walk for my feet. Victory, defeat, or surrender, the stones under me are mine to do with what I please. That's a pretty, pretty solid statement there. At least from the time you can walk. I'm just kidding. Being a wise guy. But if I hoard your dreams and try to fit my life into your dreams, I can only produce nightmares. Like a fat kid trying to fit in skinny jeans. They finally get them on and distort the seams. I think that that's the truth. We have to be who we are. We can't be what anybody else wants us to be. You know, as much as our parents want us to be this way or that way, it doesn't really work because we grow and we become our own individuals. And I think that she worded that really well here. In the very last line, so if an obstacle is meant to slow me down, I will use it for my benefit and focus on the lessons that come with it. You know, great ending line on that. I think she did a fine job. So nice work, Truth Chills. Clever piece.
Absolutely. And you're right. It really is important to be true to ourselves and that, the idea that you have to follow your own dreams rather than your parents or somebody else's. But I also, like how this speaks on that idea of learning from our mistakes, of learning from the challenges that we go through in life. There's such words of wisdom in here about, learning. And then, how it's important to keep getting back up every time you fall because that's how the small victories are won, she says there would be, without trouble, there would be no struggle. Without the struggle, there would be no gain. Without no gain, we would never achieve anything. Victories are won by losers. We never fall, how can we ever stand tall? Wonderful, thoughtful lines and just very well done. Great take on the chosen prompt.
Yeah.
So, very cool. Very cool. All right. And the next poem I'm going to put up will have a recording and it is Story Time by S. Dark.
What is this thing doing? Sorry, my refresh is not working well. But okay, I got that one. Here we go.
Story time. Sophie lurches in from the left, Margot from the right, trying to decipher words unrecognizable in the book as Mary reads aloud. It sounds like music, violin bow, horsehair across the bridge, bouncing like words on horseback up and over the rocky path, alongside the creek bed, crescendo of sound, hooves hitting hard soil, tongue enunciating thunder, downpour of hope riding bareback in the night, three girls cling as one, cliffside ride, hanging on every word. Though none know how to read.
Wonderful, Eden, right there, Scott. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. Scott wrote to, he actually wrote to the header picture, which wasn't an official prompt, But I really didn't mind that he wrote to it because the poem still fit in its own way with the topic and was definitely worth reading and listening to because it did give me such a wonderful nostalgic feel. It took me back to story time both as a kid because basically as a kid, other than a few different changes, I had the same wild imagination that I have as an adult. And my cousins and my siblings always had me be the official storyteller of the group. That is because I think I was one of the older ones. But so I was always the official storyteller when, you know, cousins and siblings were all hanging out together. And then, of course, I would always tell stories to my nieces and nephews and then my own kids. I mean, you know, obviously that doesn't happen anymore, and I miss that. It's, you know, I'm happy to see my kids growing up and becoming independent, but there was something that was just so special about story time. And I like how he writes about how that time before kids officially are learned to read, but they have that interest in reading. I really like his imagery and metaphors in this and his descriptions. Books hitting hard soil, tongue enunciating thunder, downpour of folk riding bareback in the night, three girls sing as one cliff side rise, hanging on every word, though none know how to read. So it's that wonderful use of imagination. So excellent writing, very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I love the beginning of this where he describes the image, although you don't need the image by any means. And then he goes into this bit of a story, and then it goes, though none know how to read. I thought that was funny because I can imagine these three young girls, you know, reading a story. I used air quotes for reading. And they're just making up as they go, you know, maybe looking at pictures and creating a story as they wander through this book. You know, I could be wrong because, you know, I'm sure crescendo and enunciating and everything weren't words that they were trying to figure out. I think they were just enjoying the actual images and the story to be seen. So I think this is a clever piece, and I like the way I like where he went with it. I really did. I mean, he gave us a little bit of the story, or a story, you know, whether it's the one that they were looking at, you know, I guess so, but where did they get it from? I don't know. I think it's just well done. So nice job, Scott. I really like the touch of almost innocence that you added in here between the beginning and the last lines. Because, you know, they're just loving it, you know, and I love that very much. So great job.
Absolutely. And I like that observation because, yeah, there is that sense of innocence that he has put into there. So very cool.
Absolutely.
Well, yep. And the next slide we have up is I Sit in a Dusty Corner by Allegory. And go ahead, please, Jean, and give that a read.
Okay. Give me 1 second. Well, maybe two because I am a little slow. Couple buttons, you know. And let me see now. Here we go. I sit in a dusty corner. I sit in a dusty corner of an old bookcase shelf, paper now forgotten, but the words that once I carried resonate in many a grown-up's heart. I am the reason they remember the innocent and the good, where beauty, truth, and justice against evil still prevails. Whatever ills and fails befell them, the books they read as children sustain them even when they feel the world against them. End poem. Nice.
Great reading, and what a wonderful write by Allegory. This was another one that was not written to a specific prompt, but I thought fit with the theme of the show and was worth being read. To me, it was wonderful personification of a children's book long forgotten, but and I like how it speaks on the connection that children feel, or that people feel, even when they grow up with a treasured story, with a favorite book that perhaps got them, that allowed them to escape into an imaginary world in difficult times. But I did like the personification in the first line. I sit in a dusty corner of an old bookcase shelf, paper now forgotten. And then whatever ills and fails befall them, the books they read as children sustain them, even when they feel the world against them. You know, and isn't that, to me, that is so true. Sometimes the best life lessons, I think, are learned by our favorite characters. And obviously we learn as adults that these characters were created by authors, so it's really the wisdom and advice of the authors. But relating it with a familiar character, especially as a child, I think really helps for you to digest the advice better, if that makes sense. So nicely done, and it as well. Excellent. And Dean, your thoughts?
I really liked this piece a lot. And as you said, the personification was really well done in this. And I had to start it right at the beginning. I sit in a dusty corner of an old bookcase shelf, paper now forgotten, but the words that I once carried resonate in many a grown-up's heart. I am the reason they remember, the innocent and the good. And, I stopped there, and I'm like, well, I don't know if I really want to stop there, but I could pick up the rest of the lines. I just think that was such a great set of lines there. I think that it really... I don't know. It was great because how many times, as children, we read books, Well, if we're lucky, we read books, and we read them again and again and again. And they kind of leave prints on our hearts, in different scenarios. And as we get older, they go on that shelf and they just sit there. We don't forget them, but they just sit there, and they get dusty. And if we're lucky, then the next generation goes and they read them too. And I think that he really, I don't know. Whatever ills and fails befell them, the books they read as children sustain them, even when they feel the world against them. I think that some of that hope and some of that lightheartedness, we carry with us, and it kind of, kind of helps us through. Not in an obvious way where, we go, oh, wait, the Cat in the Hat said, it's not like that. It's just
right.
Those words resonate inside of us, and I think that's what I love about it. It was really a great piece, and thank you for sharing that allegory. Really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Jean. And up next we have Going Somewhere is Like Going Nowhere by Time Teller. Going somewhere is like going nowhere, disconcerted, blurted, inside a brain to bounce. Like an ounce or run for a runway train, going nowhere is certainly like going somewhere, said the humanely trapped little mouse. A park or roadside into some woods and hedgerows, lovely and dark, just let me loose, well, call it a truce. And I can run with the scarecrow, lion, and tin man, in fun with the girl whose tails are a twirl, and her pony dangles golden from her head, as she travels the yellow without a care where she treads. Oh, yes, going somewhere is like going nowhere. Life will weigh your sack while the road brings you back. For indeed we search our need, and in what we feed to be content, we have went, traveled far and somewhat near, with our fears to rest on years. Find a home where we tone, no longer can piddle and middle to sink some riddles. Going blind is a new age fee, with inside voices that calm the seas, and sigh a breath for sailor's quest, that apparently reached beyond the middle sea. And going somewhere has brought us nowhere, because we never wanted to leave. The very idea is happy, you see, as here your home was where you always wanted to be. Epilogue. Upon a saucer by a book of Chaucer's, there is a cup of tea. When will you release me, said the mouse, who fleeced me of my biscuits, McVitie's, Oh So Rich and Rich Tea. It's tough love and old-fashioned rivalries, chivalrous because life is a throw of the dice. So I'll take you out down to the downs, or up with some of you know what I mean. And there upon the eons of history, sedimented layers of speciality, crafted wine, still releases you to sheltered far from the helpless shelter where the world sometimes has forgotten our time. And there we can sit in peace with each other, knowing together we can enjoy seeing. For are we not all the same? It's cliche, I know it's lame. But if we are and we believe in these times, then it is when it started. And we are all just a few sounds away. So up here, do you think we might hear the next trumpet as it sounds? And what note will it bring this year? Foghorn or beats from cars, sharper flash? That's the world we're at. So, Mouse, it would appear we have not traveled too far. End poem. And this was not, as far as I know, written to a specific prompt, but you obviously see references to The Wizard of Oz. I believe there's also references to Alice in Wonderland, or at least that kind of feel to it. And I'm sure there are other references that I'm personally missing. But, you know, so it was another one, again, that, you know, not a specific prompt necessarily, but fit well with the theme of the show. Mm-hmm. And Dean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought there was great imagery. It was a fun and entertaining write. I loved all the rhymes throughout. It was a great share. So nicely done, and thank you so much for sharing Time Teller. Really nice piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. There was some definitely creative and clever line references to familiar characters, some nice use of inner and end rhyme, clever imagery. I really like how he speaks on a journey of imagination into a new world. But also I think there's that idea there to me of not becoming the same as everyone else, but also realizing that the thing with life is there's always those unexpected twists and turns. So excellent writing, very well done. All right, and as soon as I get back to Late Night Poets, I'm going to put up another one that has a recording, and that is Martin the Moose by Gary Rubin.
Yes, Martin the Moose. I'm getting there. I swear I am. I can do this. I can. Okay. Well, this says it's still dialing our friend Robbie, and I don't think he's ignoring the phone for that long. So let me play Martin the Moose by Gary Rubin.
Martin the Moose by Gary Rubin. Far, far away where the northern lights dance in a land called Thunder Bay lived a young moose named Martin. This forest land was thickly wooded. Lakes and ponds were iced over, frozen solid. Skies were clean and blue. Animals ruled the forest. Winters were just too bitter cold for children. One especially difficult winter, food became quite scarce. All the animals struggled to stay warm and fed. Martin's mom, dad, brothers, and sisters struggled that winter. Martin knew there was not enough food for all of them to share. So the curious young adult moose decided to find a better place to live. Tired and quite hungry, Martin the Moose started to walk. Day after day, Martin walked. He became very lonely. His journey took him east past great lakes and through magnificent forests. Gradually, the land became kinder and more gentle. Martin began to meet new and different kinds of animals. This young moose met people, too. They were kind and generous. Often the people would feed the hungry moose. Some even shared their birthday cake with him. These people lived in large wooden houses situated next to creeks, streams, and rivers. Other footprints led Martin to the Hudson River banks, which he followed as it flowed south to warmer weather. After many weeks, Martin wandered into a thickly settled place called New York City. Martin had never seen a city before. The young moose found work at Barker's Cafe. Marty cleaned up tables and dishes after the nice people had finished their restaurant meals. Mr. Barker was a beagle that was always hunting for dependable workers like Marty. Martin once told Mr. Barker that his dream was to someday become a great chef. Mr. Barker shook his big floppy ears, then patted Martin on his antlers. "Sorry, Marty, but Barker's Cafe already has a great chef. You know that Pierre the Bucktooth Beaver is our head chef." The young moose did not let it disappoint him that Mr. Barker had not given him a chance. One cold, dreary winter day, the wind blew in from the northeast, and with it came a huge blizzard. 3 feet of fresh white snow blanketed the city. All the people, dogs and beavers, were trapped at home. There was so much snow that the plows couldn't keep the streets and sidewalks clean. None of the other workers could reach Barker's Cafe. That left only Martin and Mr. Barker to operate the restaurant. Martin was finally given his chance to cook. The restaurant was packed with snowbound neighbors. Everyone loved the special meals Marty created. The food was so good, the restaurant so busy, that Mr. Barker made Martin the new chef of Barker's Cafe. After all the snow had finally been melted away, people came from everywhere to taste the special creations Marty cooked. Dinner guests would always order Martin's prize dessert, a sugary, sweet, creamy chocolate delight. Marty loved to feed and make other people happy. The young moose never forgot the days when his own stomach was empty and hungry. He was thrilled that so many people and their children loved the dessert Marty had named the Chocolate Moose.
Great reading right there, Gary. Thank you for sharing that with us. And I should mention that we're actually done with the contest rights, and the next three poems we're going to go through are extra ones that were shared for the show and were on topic, but not from the contest. And he actually mentions in his AN that he created this story over 40 years ago at a wedding to occupy his young niece and nephew. So very cool, very cool. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean?
No, I wasn't. Am I now? Can you hear me?
You are now. Yes, I can hear you now.
As long as you can hear me. Yes, I can, but it didn't happen as being on mute, so I don't know what that was about.
That is really odd.
Oh, well,
huh.
Hopefully
I can hear you now.
That's helpful. Otherwise, you'd have been all by yourself and not alone.
That was my, I had that panic second there where I'm like, I guess I'm finishing up the show by myself.
another 40 minutes I got to do this? Oh, my God. Yeah, I love this story. I really did. I liked how he started it out, and it just, started out as, a hungry moose, going to there was more, enough food maybe for their family, and he could go off and find a better place, and I like that. But then when he got to New York and he got a job, I was like, check him out, but I really liked the Barker's Cafe. I thought that was a cute name. They had the head chef. Marty was disappointed, but he came through in the end, because when no one else could get there, he could. And I thought that was great. But then when it got to the very tail end of this, Marty had named the Chocolate Moose. And I thought that was a cute ending for this, and nicely done. So I have to say, Gary, I really loved the piece. So it was a great write and a great share. It was really enjoyable. I, you know, I love so many of the lines throughout because it was a little bit of a longer story. But is it, that's what I liked about it. It was a children's story. It wasn't just, you know, written about a story or anything like that. I think it's just a good piece. Nicely done.
It is. It really is. And, yes, wonderful comment. I really enjoy this. I do enjoy the good children's story. I do think that Gary needs to actually make this into a book. You know, like if he doesn't draw himself, he needs to find a friend or somebody who will illustrate it for him.
Absolutely.
Because this absolutely would be a wonderful, you know, children's
absolutely.
Book with illustrations. Just absolutely delightful. Robbie, who's listening on the board, really enjoyed it too, especially since Robbie's from Canada. And he says, this is as Canadian gets. Cool.
There you go.
So,
there you go.
It definitely got the thumbs up from a Canadian. I like the wordplay of at the end where it says, you are thrilled that so many people and all their children love dessert. Marty had named the chocolate mousse, but it felt like the animal mousse instead of the regular dessert.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have it in your area, but here we have an ice cream called Moose Trap, which has like caramel cups and caramel running through it. We also have cow tracks too. We have cow tracks and meat tracks and all kinds of tracks. I thought this was a wonderful story told about a young moose who strikes out on his adventure and finds his place in the world and his calling. So excellent writing, very well done.
Yeah, I actually agree with
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And up next we have Space Race by Naomi Sarah. And go ahead, please, Dean, and give that a read.
Did I not have? I have an audio for that, Pam.
That's actually, Naomi shared another poem for the other topic in case we needed it.
Okay.
So, yeah, this one doesn't have an audio.
Okay, so I think I'll read this one then. What do you think? Be a good idea?
Sounds like a good plan.
Maybe you should have thought of that. Oh, my God. Okay, this is called Space Race. I flew to the moon on a purple dragon, rode over its craters in a brassy bright wagon. Blew a bubble so stupendously enormous, crept inside, became Captain Astronomus. Drove headlong through the zillion stars with mercurial speed, swept by Mars. Slid headfirst down the Milky Way, found a cow who wanted to play. Sprang over the moon, landed on Uranus, head over heels, tumbled back to Venus. Met up with an alien ready to fight with just one eye. What a horrible sight. With eight great tentacles instead of arms, he had plenty. I became alarmed, but stood and fought him face to face, sent him headless into space. Now clear the hooey from your head, because it's time for piano lessons, Mother said. So I rocketed headstrong back to Earth, left this rhyme behind for mirth. End poem.
Oh, good news, Dean. This was just absolutely a delightful write from Naomi. Great humor, especially when you get to the end line, you know, because... You know, there's a, you know, some, most children, but some are more daydreamers than others. Like, you know, you've always got those children that are off in their own little world daydreaming about spaceships and aliens. And then, of course, you got to have the mom or the piano teacher or the teacher, you know, somebody come by and say, now clear the hooey from your head. Because it's time for piano lessons, Mother said. And great wordplay in here. I love the phrases in the beginning, too, where blew a bubble so stupendously enormous, crept inside, became Captain Astronomus. Wonderful lines and very well done. And, Jean, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a great tale told by Naomi. I love the imagery throughout because she described things in such a way you could actually, appreciate and imagine everything. And I liked that. I thought it was a fun piece, and I thought the ending was great. Now clear the hooey from your head, because it's time for piano lessons, Mother said. So I rocketed headstrong back to Earth and left this rhyme behind for mirth. I like the way she ended it. A childhood daydream. Yeah, that's a perfect way to say it, Naomi. Great job.
Absolutely. Great comment, Izzy. Yeah, that was a great ending. And our last poem on this topic is Nothing But Tiger Pants by Puddles 33. I choose to speak about nothing. It seems like the best thing to do, because if I talk about something, my kids will come down with the flu. Sure, you can try and convince me that something's much better than none, but you ain't seen their pajamas. There's tigers inside each one. Those cats get hungry at midnight, so they drag my kids from their bed. They haul them off to the kitchen, demanding they feed them pink bread. The bread is high in the cupboard. There's no way that it can be eaten. The kids must stand on the counter where bald crocodiles have been beached. Those crocs can get kind of cranky and snap at whatever slides by. Speed and agility matter if you don't want your kids to die. I told you from the beginning, it's nothing I choose to discuss. So if you want to hear something, pink bread is an absolute must. End poem. And Dean, your thoughts?
Oh, I thought this was a cute piece. I really did. I like to, let me see. Okay, sure you can try to convince me that something's much better than none, but you ain't seen their pajamas. There's tigers inside of each one. Those cats get hungry at midnight, so they drag my kids from their bed. They haul them off to the kitchen, demanding they feed them pink bread. I thought that was clever. I don't know what pink bread is, but hey, imagination is wonderful. And then when it went into the crocodiles, I started to chuckle and thought that was just a great addition to it. You know, something, another bit of depth to the poem itself. So I like that. And then I like the final stanza. I told you from the beginning, it's nothing I choose to discuss. So if you want to hear something, pink bread is an absolute must. So, yeah, it was fun. It was clever. I loved the rhyme throughout. And it was a cute tale all the way through. So definitely enjoyable. Nice job, Puddles.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I did enjoy the rhyme in this and the imagery and how it kind of reminded me of like Lewis Carroll style storytelling with the bringing in the like absolute ridiculousness. Well, there could actually be such a thing as pink bread. I could easily see that happen, and why not? I mean, I suppose you just have to get the right, put in a, like red food dye or something. After all, there is some taste. But I like how she brings out this wonderful, almost surreal and ridiculously fun imagery, but with the reality of what it's like to deal with cats and children at nighttime. You know, those cats get hungry at midnight, so they drag my kids from their bed. They haul them off to the kitchen, demanding they feed them pink bread. And the mention of the crocodile kind of made me think of that childhood game where you jump from, like, furniture to furniture and pretend like the floor was lava. And the whole idea was, like, not to touch the lava, not to touch the floor. But in this case, it's, you know, stay away from the crocodiles on the counter. I thought this was just absolutely delightful and very well done. All right. And now we're going to start going into candy shop, right? So, let me see here. Okay, so you read Naomi's, which means I will read this next one that I put up. And, oh wait, no, I have Papa.
You read Naomi.
You will. That's right. You will read this next one. For some reason, I'm always so used to Puddles having a sound cloud.
I know.
But I completely blanked out that I read it. I'm like, okay, there's a green sound cloud. And now it is time for some candy, as Robbie says. So this first one is called Nostalgia by Vicky Moore. And go ahead, please, and give that a read.
Let me see if it shows up. Here it is. I found it. I had it refreshed 5 times for that one poem.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
Okay, here we go. Nostalgia. I am filled with nostalgia as I peer into the old candy store. Lacy cobwebs cover the empty shelves and jars. I look again and I see the jars full of candy and the scale waiting to weigh out our portion. Clutching tight to our handful of pennies, my siblings and I would run to this very store, crossing the street so carefully, like Mama said. Inside, the store was a magical fairyland with multicolored sweets to choose from. Red and yellow jawbreakers, black licorice, and creamy chocolates filled big jars. The owners themselves, Margie and Sam, would smile as they gave us free samples. Choosing was so hard. Even though we always picked the same things, Kathy picked the brightly colored gumballs, Johnny chose the biggest chocolate bar he could find, and I always asked for the licorice, loving how it made my tongue black. We walked home slowly, savoring our treats. Sorrow filled us by the time we got home. All our money was spent for the week, and there would be no more candy. With my hands cupped around my squinting eyes, not noticing the dust or the emptiness, I felt the joy of childhood overflowing in my heart. I think I will move back home and buy this store. Children need candy shops, the old-fashioned kind, so they will have the happiness of memories. End poem.
Wonderful, Jersey. And, I thought this was such a great take on the prompt or the theme. I gave this one the silver. I really liked how she actually had the transformation that happens when the mind is looking at an old tape. Like, the imagery of lazy cobwebs cover the empty shelves and jars. I look again and I see the jars full of candy and the scale waiting to weigh out our portion. And so through her imagination, through her memories, she's transported back in time, and what she's looking at physically changes. This really is a perfect title for this poem because it is a wonderful nostalgic write. I, too, very much enjoyed the black licorice, I have to say. And, of course, her ending is just great. It wraps it up so nicely. I like how she says, children need candy shops, the old-fashioned kind, so they will have the happiness of memory. Yes, you know, we have a place in Spooner. We used to have a place, we don't need more, but we used to have a place in Spooner like that, where it was just like one of those old-fashioned candy shops. But they really don't, like, nowadays you can just pretty much go anywhere and buy candy, and it's nice. I mean, I still like candy, but it's just not quite the same experience as going into one of those old-fashioned candy shops. But great write by Vicky, and very well done. And you're welcome.
Well, I think Vicky did a wonderful job here. You know, nostalgia is the perfect word, and memories of childhood happy times. You know, I love how she looked through the window and the cobwebs were there and the shelves were empty, and it transformed from memory how it used to be and the things that she remembered from childhood. And I think that it was well done, well told, and I really liked it a lot, very, very much. So excellent job, Vicky. And thanks so much for sharing with us. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comment there. All right. And let me grab the next one, which is oh yes, Robbie mentions that candy cigarettes. Yep, that's definitely a very nostalgic thing. You don't see those anymore. That's for sure. Well, up next we have Candy Love by Lone Avocado. When I was a child, every time I went to the candy shop, I would end up buying a lollipop. There were Jawbreakers, my favorite, for my parents, my craziness was hard to tolerate. There were gummies, an assortment of them. It has been 50 years, the candy shops are still the same. I still love candy, even when I am now 50. I am still a big boy, only grown lofty. My daughter loves candy too. If I say no, she is full of woe. Like father, like daughter. Her DNA is revealed sooner rather than later. She cannot control herself when she goes to a candy store. I remember when my parents would say no, I would cry lying on the floor. I understand my daughter's craziness very well. She brings me my childhood. In my childhood, I dwell. And home. And your thoughts.
I thought this was a great piece. I thought there was a lot of really wonderful memories expressed throughout the piece. You know, where is this? My daughter loves candy, too. If I say no, she is full of woe. Like father, like daughter. Her DNA is revealed sooner rather than later. She cannot control herself when she goes to the candy store. I remember when my parents would say no, I would cry lying on the floor. I understand my daughter's craziness very well. She brings me to my childhood. In my childhood, I dwell. I think that was just, I think that was beautiful. Because, you know, we do see ourselves in our children, and to take it to this place at the candy shop, I think is just wonderful. You know, his description of the candy shop in the beginning was great, but I love the comparison to his daughter. So, nice job, and thank you so much, Lone Avocado.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was really glad you were inspired, and I have to agree with you. I mean, wonderful lines all the way through, but yeah, the comparison between him and his daughter was definitely the best. And the idea of how candy brings back those childhood memories. Though I did also like the humor in, for my parents, my craziness was hard to tolerate. Yeah, when you have a kid that really loves candy, yep, it's not always easy as a parent. I told him that for me, out of my four kids, it was my second born, Jaren, who inherited my love of sweets, especially gummies and taffies and licorice. I thought this was such an enjoyable write on the indulgence in candy that we partake in and enjoy even as adults. So, excellent
right.
writing, very well done. And up next we have Candy, Candy, Candy by Daniel Duhame. And go ahead, please, Jean, and give that a read.
Sure. Let me get back over there. Candy, candy, candy. Red licorice rainbows and soda fountain rivers surrounded by lollipop trees and gumball rocks with fizzy candy clouds, making a child's eyes open wide with the smell of intoxicating sugar filling the air with peppermint dreams. Chocolate sundaes, marshmallow snowmen, and gumdrop eyes, with gumdrop eyes, and a sugar baby for a mouth. Caramel squares wrapped in cellophane, water toffee bites, cotton candy in a bucket. Every candy displayed to tantalize and allure you to its charms. Inside an old store with wooden beams for a floor, and wooden display cases gleaming with eye candy, as an old gentleman of 80 who sits behind the counter to serve you gets up to convince you to buy his candy. End poem.
great read there, Jean. I have to say I really like the enthusiasm of that title, Candy, 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 because that's how I feel when I walk into a candy store. But I like how he goes through specific candies. To me, this has just wonderful imagery. Really, I read this poem, and it had my mouth watering. And I really liked how he painted the scene with his words in such a delightful and realistic way. I told him that I would definitely buy candy from the old man. There would be, like, no twisting my arm. And he happened to tell me in his response that his mom actually grew asparagus in their backyard and that he would bring it to the store owner who would give him a dollar to buy candy. You know, great lines all the way through, but I really like easy candy display to tantalize and allure you to its charms inside an old store with wooden beams for a floor and wooden display cases gleaming with eye candy. That was wonderful wordplay there and very well done. I like that. And your thoughts, Jean?
You know, I thought this was an excellent piece by Daniel. I thought it was fabulous imagery, and I really enjoyed it very much. I have to say, you know, his descriptions all in the beginning were just wonderful. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm with you. My mouth was watering going, yeah, I like that too. And then when he went into the inside of the store, inside an old store with wooden beams for a floor and wooden display cases, I loved that as well. But then I look down into the author's notes, and he says, in loving memory of a dear friend and store owner, Claude Provost. And I thought that that was wonderful, that he actually knew someone that he could focus on to write the piece, because I think it was wonderful. Nicely done. Wonderful job, Daniel, and thanks for sharing. I really liked it very much.
Me too. I'm glad you pointed out that AN, because to be honest, I had missed it. I mean, I still like the poem. It still won the bronze in the contest, but it adds a nice extra layer to, be able to see that AN. And like you said, that the prompt actually gave thought to write about someone that he actually knew. So,
right.
You know, very cool. And, all right. And up next, we have Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor by Betty Page. Betty had missed the contest, but was nice enough to share her write with us because she was very inspired, and I'm glad of that. So her write goes like this. Wonderland of sweet, rainbow unicorn colors swirled within my mind. Cherished happy face, 1900s retro style. Old-fashioned with glass, posters lined the walls, proper ladies, gentlemen, melodic music, sunshine and laughter, families dine all day long, beloved traditions, enter through glass doors, warm, inviting, fancy friends, greet you with a smile, candies surround us, every kind is hard to choose, bright neon colors, scents of vanilla, truffles made of chocolate, all different fillings. Shimmery pop rocks, astro pop, jelly belly, sweet cotton candy, cherry funnel cake, fine divine ice cream flavors, assorted sodas, old-fashioned menus, favorite challenges too with several rewards. Waiters ring these bells. We all watch to see who wins, place like no other. Favorite candy store I wish was still here today, lost in my daydreams. And she puts that it was actually inspired by her favorite candy shop and ice cream parlor, Farrell's. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought there was a lot of great imagery in this, as with a few of the other pieces. You know, you get all these descriptions of all these different candies and thoughts. I have to say, Wonderland of sweets, rainbow unicorn colors, swirls within my mind. Cherished happy place, 1900s retro style, old-fashioned with class. Posters lined the walls, Copper Ladies, Gentlemen, Melodic Music, Sunshine and Laughter, Families Dine All Day Long, Beloved Traditions. I think she really did a fine job writing about this place that she was familiar with as a child. And I think, you can almost envision it all. So I think that the imagery was really good there. And then she gets into the different candies. Oh, God. Here we go again. My mouth is saying, yeah, what do you got out there? But definitely enjoyed the piece. I loved her last three lines. Favorite candy store I wish was still here today, lost in my daydreams. You know, you start thinking and you just kind of get lost up in it all, remembering how it was. So definitely an excellent job. So thanks for sharing, Betty.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I have to agree. There is something about candy that, and because of the bright colors and the different kinds, and, it just really does make for wonderful nostalgic rites. So I feel like a lot of these rites have, because of, as you were mentioning, the imagery in them, have really been a feast for the eyes, and then because of the nostalgia, they've been a feast for the heart. And Betty's is no exception.
Right.
Wonderful 575 lines, wonderful imagery. I mean, she even brings in the other senses, like the sense of vanilla and all the different candies. And again, like you said, mouth-watering. I like that she brings up the assorted sodas and the cherry funnel cake, fine divine ice cream flavors, assorted sodas. Because it takes me back to the idea of the ice cream parlors with the flavored sodas before flavored sodas were bottled. Like, even I remember as a kid, there were certain places where they would add the flavored stuff to the soda. But now it's like everything just comes in a plastic bottle. And while it can be tasty, it's just not quite the same. But, wonderful ending line, paying, and a great rite, paying tribute to a memory of the favorite candy shop and ice cream parlor. So, very cool and very well done.
Right.
And
Yep.
Let's see here.
Oh, God, I refreshed and lost the room. There we are.
Goodness gracious, yes.
I know, it's just a tough day for me. I'm just being silly, I guess. Oh,
yeah.
Candy.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised I'm not having trouble with it, but, knock on wood, so far not, and,
You keep
right,
knocking
so.
Anything could change.
up next, we have Orville's Candy Kingdom by Jody Melton. And go ahead, please, Dean, and give that a read.
Okay, Orville's Candy Kingdom. In the heart of Fairview's quaint embrace stood a candy store, a magical place, where sugary dreams in my childhood thrived and every penny spent felt truly inside. Orville, the keeper with a smile so grand, welcomed me in with treats in his hand. Got a new box of Tops off the truck, young man, with I with only lunch money and a craving for stars resigned to the gumstick menu, but I had the cards. With half a carton in hand and a bottle of Dew, a mere 50 cents, and with empty bottles, each worth 10 cents, a sweet bargain presents. Me, with only four empties for a soda, a deal so true, Orville's generosity always shined through. Drink it here, he'd say, the empty bottle will have your 50 cents paid. Cowtails, lemon heads, a sugary array, Boston baked beans to brighten the day. Charleston shoes, a delightful treasure, each visit to the shore, to the store, a moment to measure. Orville, a deputy with stories to tell of adventures bold where heroes dwell. His badge gleamed bright, his tail spun gold, in his candy kingdom, stories untold. With a twinkle in his eye, he shared his lore, as I sip my soda longing for more. His gun on display, a symbol of order, in Orville's store, love and friendship built of brick and mortar. In that candy store on Fairview Street, memories linger, oh so sweet. With my head on a swivel, down the aisles I'll glide to find the new candy I seen on the poster outside. For in every candy and every tale, a piece of my childhood will forever prevail. Though time may pass and memories fade, the candy store on Fairview is forever made. Orville's kindness, like candy's sweet, was a treasure to cherish, and with a smile, a memory to greet. End poem.
Mm-hmm. Great reading, Gene, and what a wonderful run by Joni. I gave him the gold in the contest because I love the nostalgia of this writer, how he writes a favorite candy shop, his attention to detail, the imagery, and how he brings up, you know, specific candies and other treats and joy. I thought it was a really nice touch that he brought in the top trading cards, the baseball cards that came with the gum, and Boston baked beans, because I have to say, you don't really see too many people mention Boston baked beans.
Right.
I thought, you know, that was really cool. Like I said, there's a wonderful attention to detail, and I like how it wasn't just about the candy itself, although obviously that's a very main focus, but about the memories of the kindness and the heart of the Orville, a deputy with stories to tell of adventures bold where heroes dwell, his bad seem bright, his tales fun, golden candy kingdom stories unfold. You know, and then those ending lines really wrapped it up nicely, and those treasured memories that greet you with a smile. So, wonderful writing, very well done. And your thoughts, Gene?
You know, I thought this piece was great from top to bottom. I like the mention of the Topps cards as well, Pam, I have to say. I put here, well, hang on, I got to drop it so I can read it. Otherwise, I have to go back and find it. Orville the Keeper with a smile so grand, welcomed me in with treats in his hand. Got a new box of Topps off the truck, young man. I was only lunch money and a craving for stars, resigned to the gumstick menu, but I had the cards. Excuse me. With half a carton in hand and a bottle of dew, a mere 50 cents, and with empty bottles, each worth 10 cents, a sweet bargain presents. Me with only four empties for a soda, a deal so true, Orville's generosity always shined through. Drink it here, he'd say, the empty bottle will have your 50 cents paid. You know, he captures that, the memory of trading in bottles. You know, I never remembered that. And I mean, I don't, different areas, different times, and I probably have a lot to do with it. But I think that this was just really well done all the way through. You know, the twinkle in his eye. Oh, yeah, I just really liked it. I thought it came off as very genuine. And that's what I liked about it.
You know what? That is a good word to describe that, right? It is. It is very genuine. So, great comment there. And the next write we have is Dripping Sugary Frost by Naomi Sarah. And we do have a SoundCloud for that one.
I do. I do have a SoundCloud for that. I remember. Here we go.
Dripping Sugary Frost. Living 2 doors down from the corner store, the sun-baked sidewalk became our playground, while the railing of the store steps our merry-go-round. And all those candies in that store window are utmost childhood wonderland. The counter screamed in a riot of vibrant colors, sugar-covered fruit jellies, licorice of all sorts, juicy bubble gum, sour lollipops, and fizzy cola bottles, leaving our mouths aching and salivating with thoughts of sugary froth coating our taste buds while hummingly melting into our pink tongues. Now, my brother, Mr. Entrepreneur, would pick flowers from the neighbors' front yards, then ring their doorbells to sell them back for a few pennies. Well, of course, this one fatal day, the dear old lady across the street recognized the Twiggy improvised bouquet. After giving us an earful, she called up our poor mother. And I swear, over those next few days, it wasn't our aching mouth the problem as much as a red behind.
Oh, man, I love the humor in this. It's so great. Such a wonderful story. And thank you, Naomi, for sharing this with us. A wonderful read and write. Love the imagery and the storytelling and how she brings us back to childhood memories of getting in trouble with siblings and the joys and misdeeds of being a child, and that relatable ending made me think of some of the trouble I got into with my siblings and cousins. I did love the imagery and the candy she described, and the counter screamed in a riot of vibrant hues, sugar-covered fruit jellies, licorice of all sorts, juicy bubblegum, sour lollipops, and fizzy cola bottles. And then when she goes, like the last three stanzas, when she goes into the telling about how they would make the bouquets and sell or out of the flowers picked and sell them back and then got caught. Oh, my goodness. That is just, it was just really a wonderfully entertaining write. And Jean, your thoughts. Are you on mute, Jean? Or technical problems again? Hello? Uh-oh. Well, let me check the studio.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Okay.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I can't hit mute button, because if you hit the mute button, it doesn't mute you, but it mutes you. And then you can't see if you're muted or unmuted. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry. I got a...
Oh, my goodness.
I have a complaint thing in progress. Don't you worry. But I love the beginning of this piece with the candies and the descriptions and all of that. But when she got to, now my brother, Mr. Entrepreneur, that was when I started going, okay. And I had to laugh because I just started to chuckle like, okay, well, that's one way to get candy money, right? But her ending three lines. And I swear over those next few days, it wasn't our aching mouths the problem as much as our red behinds. Yep. Yep, yep, Mom got him. Mom got him. I think it was just really, really, really a clever piece with a good bit of humor, and I really enjoyed it. So great share, Naomi. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree. Wonderful comment. Well, our last poem for the night, and I'm going to go ahead and share it, is mine, because it's not too long, and, well, there's only one person to comment on it, so... and this is Candy Shop, and it goes like this. Candy store offerings baskets full of sweets, rows and rows of delectable treats. There's red licorice and black, that's my favorite. With such joy, I savor it. Saltwater taffy wrapped in wax paper, twist and unwrap all the flavors. Bright yellow lemon drops popped in my smile. Big jawbreakers last a while. Root beer barrels, caramel, and lollipops. These tasty dreams, they never stop. Colorful candy sticks and chocolate bars. Gummy worms and gummy cars. Candy of our childhood brings happy memories of flavorful melodies. Peppermint and butterscotch melt against the tongue. Wishing for a world of candy for each and every one. End poem.
I love this piece, Pam. I really do. I love all the descriptions all the way through. You know, these tasty dreams, they never stop. Yeah, yeah. I'm liking it. Root beer barrels, boy, do they bring back a memory. I can feel my tongue hurting now because they were pretty... Yep. But yeah, and I love the way you ended. A peppermint and butterscotch melted into your tongue, wishing for a world of candy for each and every one. Yeah, everybody should be so lucky as to be to have that opportunity and to enjoy such wonderful spoils, you know. But yeah, really, really a nice piece, and it goes so well with the image and everything else. I really liked it. Lots of great descriptions. Yep. And I love the rhyme. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. I was going to try to do a three-line rhyme all the way through, but it just worked out for the last stanza to be a four-line rhyme, and I thought, well, you know.
Right. Well, sometimes you got to be a little different.
Exactly. Sometimes it's just, you have to just listen to whatever, wherever the poem goes. But, it was a great show tonight. Thank you, Jean, as always, for being my twisted sister and being here. thank you to Naomi for all she does. And what I meant to say is that a shout-out to Naomi, that I hope she feels better soon. Thank you to Robbie and Steve for hanging on the board, to everyone who listened to the show while we wrote for the show, listened to the show while it was on live or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And Dean, anything you'd like to say in closing?
No. Who's got Wednesday?
Me and Naomi, if Naomi's feeling better. If not, then it's me and whoever shows up. So,
well, you better hope
somebody
shows
out.
Up. You better hope somebody shows up because the phones are all screwy. You know how that is.
Well, that's even if I can get on. I mean, if the phones are all screwy, I don't even know if I'll be able to get on.
Well, it's a good thing you called when you did. You got the list.
Oh, my God. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night.
Honest to God. Well, it was a great show, Pam. Great prompts and, a lot of good poetry. Really enjoyable.
It was. It was a kind of poetry that, for the most part, brought a lot of smiles, I think.
Yes.
So, and I enjoyed
it. Sometimes
that.
It's nice to be lighthearted, which is always awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, kiddo. Well, have a great night, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Night, everybody.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you, Robbie. Good night.